Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Red Snapper, and we got that show this evening that's going to turn everybody on. We got some special guests that's going to be here this evening, so we want you to sit back and relax as we bring it to you. Word Sexy Radio tonight on this 6/17/2013. And that's India Reed with that new cut she's got out called Cocoa Butter. Sexy Radio, and I'm your host, Red Snapper, and of course we got my man DB Hint here. How you doing, DB?
Man, better than I can talk about, man. I'm doing good.
Well, you had to have had a great Father's Day, I'm sure, and all those who had a Father's Day yesterday, we want to thank you all and for doing your job as fathers, and hopefully that's what you're doing. So I'm sure you enjoyed your time.
Oh yeah, man. It was nice. So you know, I got a lot of love. So you know, I appreciate everybody who sent messages my way.
And I say the same thing, too, because even though I'm crazy sometimes, I am a father as well. And I had a great time and enjoyed the time that I had with my loved ones as well. So but what we got tonight, we got a special guest. We got a couple of special guests coming on this evening. We got Electra Rome Parks is going to be here. And we also have a Miss Nassar, and I'm going to get her here on as well. But let me see who we got, because we got a couple of people in the standby. We're going to bring them in. We got them introduce themselves. I'm going to start out with area code 770. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Red Snapper. It's Electa Rome Parks.
And you knew I knew it was you. You knew that, right?
Well, you know,
how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
We're doing fine, and as always, welcome to have that lovely voice of yours come on the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, and we're going to get it going because I know you have a lot to do, so we're going to start with you. But let me see. We have our other guest, 757. State your name. Where you calling from?
This is Author Designer Sierra. I'm here.
Well, how are you this evening?
I'm good.
Well, DV, say hello to both our guests.
Hello, ladies. Glad to
Hi.
See both of you make it.
Hi, DV. How are you doing?
I'm well.
You always sound like you just came through so much, doesn't it? Why would you say that, man? Because we got some sexy women on the show. You know how it goes. Okay. Well, what we're going to do first is we're going to start it with Miss Electa. I love saying her name. Electa, we're going to start with you because I know you have a very, very busy schedule. Not that my other lady doesn't, but we're going to start with you.
Okay.
And we're going to give you your time because I know you got, you know, I don't know if you want to go past 30 minutes or whatever. It's on you. So we're going to let you go ahead and get started
by
introducing yourself and telling us what's going on.
Okay. Well, I'm author Electa Rome Parks, and I wanted to come on the show tonight and tell you a little bit about two of my most recent releases. One came out in January, called When Baldwin Loved Brendan. And it's it is my first romance. So I want to talk a little bit about that. And also, I have an anthology that just dropped the end of May. And it's co-written by myself and Eric Pete. And it's called Full Figured Six. So we're showing some love for the plus-size divas out there. And this is number six in the series. I want to talk a little bit about that and just whatever, of course, Red Snapper, you and DV want to talk about. I mean, I'm open.
Well, we definitely going to be throwing some questions your way. Go ahead,
not give them such liberties. Do not give them those type of liberties. Because you'll be talking about things you never would have imagined.
Okay.
And you'd be like, you know how I do. Every now and then a little profanity comes out and you might get offended, which I hope you don't because you're a grown woman. But you know how it is.
Well, I haven't heard that side of you, but no, I won't get offended. I, like you said, I'm a grown woman, and it's your
That's right.
show.
That's right. So no problem. I don't want to run you away. Never, never want to do that. Okay. So, Miss, how do you say your name? I'm sorry, I don't want to mess it up because I will butcher it, and I don't want to do that. So tell us a little bit about you real quick. That's 757 area code.
It's Design Not Fear.
Okay, I knew it was something like that, but I just didn't want to destroy it. So tell
us
a little bit about
strange.
You.
I'm an author. I write urban fiction, urban drama fiction, and I also do paranormal books. I'm just starting doing that. I'm dropping my first paranormal book this month. So I'm real excited about that. That's a real fun genre to play in.
Are you playing with succubus, incubus, what, vampires? What are you messing with?
Nah, I'm not messing with that. The main character is actually telekinetic. That means that she can move things with her mind, and not only can she move things, she can also change their shape. So
a shapeshifter. Interesting. Okay. Well, we're going to get with you in a minute, but let's get Electa back here for just a second because I want to get her to get the full effect here. And plus, I just want to hear that voice again. You know how it goes. But anyway, how did you come up with the concept of doing an anthology with Eric?
Well, basically, we were just asked. Our agent, we shared the same agent, so our agent came to us and asked if this would be something that we'd be interested in doing and if our schedules permitted. And I had always wanted to write with Eric because we have a long history. We go back in the day where, you know, a lot of commonalities where one time, you know, our previous agents were the same. We wrote for the same publishing house. We had the same editor. We got picked up and went mainstream around the same time. And so just a lot of, you know, common history, and we've kind of come up somewhat similar paths through the years. And so I'd always wanted to write with him. And, of course, he has his new title now, New York Times best-selling author. So I didn't want to pass up that opportunity either. So basically the agent came to us, and I mean, this is an anthology. This is number 6 in the series. So it's pretty popular. And again, like I said earlier, the storylines all center around plus-size divas. So basically, you know, you can pretty much come up with your own story because, you know, of course, these are short stories that are made into one novel or whatever. So, but the commonality is the storyline as far as the main character or characters have to focus on plus-size women.
Interesting. And, it's kind of like a Carl Weber kind of background, isn't it?
Well, actually, it is. It's one of those, you know, Carl Weber presents series. And it was pretty much that simple. You know, we just got the call, hey, is this something you have time to do or is this something you want to do? And, of course, we both jumped on it, and it wasn't as far as from our individual perspective, it wasn't writing a full-length novel. So it was ideal. You know, it was a break from, you know, going out there writing, you know, a full-length novel and to be able to just focus kind of on a shorter story. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it only recently came out, but you know, I've gotten emails from readers that are thanking me, you know, for, you know, focusing on the plus size women, and so it was, you know, it was just a fun story. I think both of them are two really fun stories that the readers will enjoy. And because, you know, sometimes as authors you do get the complaints, or not necessarily the complaints, but, you know, a lot of times the readers will say, you know, every book, you know, I'm reading, you know, the main character is
bi-skinned,
you know, right. Everybody in the world is not light skin and long hair or wear size 6. So, you know, write about everybody. So so I was a little surprised that I was getting those types of emails where they were, you know, were saying, you know, thanks for thinking about us. You know, everybody's not a size 6 or whatever. But, again, like I said, it was just really a fun story, and it was fun writing, you know, writing with Eric, since, you know, he has as far as the story, the series that he's doing with Carl Weber.
Right. So what is your most favorite out of that anthology that you think that you put in there?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it was only one story a piece. I mean, my story was long enough, and his story was long enough to make one book, so to speak. But it's just the one story for me, and it's just the one story from Eric.
Hmm. Okay. I like that. So
my story is called Black Widow. And pretty much,
you know, I was just getting ready to ask about that. Black widow. Okay. Black damn widow. Okay, tell us about that. Black widow.
Oh, you're gonna add that adjective in there, huh?
You know, I gotta put that. I'm sorry. I had to, because there's so many of them out there, and they're calling us thirsty and all of that. So I figured, you know, we got the black widows. There you go.
There are not a lot of these. The main character, her name is Erica Kane. She's named after her mother's favorite soap opera victim. So I hope there's not a lot of these types of black widows out there.
I don't know.
I don't know. You need to read the story before you say that. But
that's right.
So basically, it focuses around her. She's, you know, as she says, she's big, bold, and beautiful. You know, very self-assured, very headstrong, opinionated. But she's always been unlucky in love. And to prove the point that she's always been unlucky in love, she has 3 dead husbands to prove that point. So just as she's about to give up on love, and, of course, there's the old, you know, the sayings go, when you least expect it, just like in the soap operas, she meets someone that she thinks is the love of her life, but just like in the soap opera and on TV, you know, things can be deceiving. And so that is my portion of Full Figure 6. That's pretty much the teaser for Black Widow. And then Eric's story is titled Oops, I Did It Again. But, of course, Eric's not here to describe his story, but that's what
right.
That's titled.
Well, we'll have to get him over here and
get him
on that. Yeah, definitely have to do that. So, yeah, that's interesting. Go ahead, Didi.
Mike, I have a statement and also a question.
Okay, sure.
I do think, and I agree with you in this aspect, that there's not enough diversity amongst our characters, that every man, you know, is packing with 10 inches of love, and every woman is, you know, size 0 and, you know, with triple D breasts. You know, so, you know, I do agree that we do need more diversity and
mm-hmm.
that you shouldn't even have to put full figured in your title in order for people to be able to, you know, understand what the book is about or even to relate to the character.
Well,
that,
we didn't title it because, this
right.
is the sixth one in this series that is very, very popular from my understanding. In fact, there is a seventh one coming out, I think, in the late fall with another set of authors. But I mean, I think, you know, this identifies, I mean, you have to have something that's going to let the readers know that, hey, you know, the storylines do center upon, you know, this type of character or whatever, as opposed to, you know, having some more generic or some other title. I mean, this is definitely telling you, you know, full figured. And so there's no questions about it, you know, who the main characters are going to be.
Right.
So, I mean, oh no, with all that being said,
uh-huh.
I still, with this new book that you came out with, Ball with Love, Brendan.
Right. Now, that
I
came
would,
out the first of the year, in January.
Right. I would
January.
Like, you know, I would like to know, you know, a little more about this book, the premise. And I'm
okay.
pretty sure anybody who's listening who hasn't had opportunity to read anything that you've written previously would like a,
no,
you know,
can't
a brief
say
run
that. Out. This is book number 10. They have to have read something previously. But yeah, when Baldwin Loves Brendan actually was my book number 10. Came out end of January of this year, and then, of course, the anthology was my – actually, I got that switched around. When Baldwin Loved Brendan was book number 9, and the anthology was book number 10. But basically, like I said earlier, it was my first so-called attempt at a romance novel. And primarily, you know, all the romance authors out there are, you know, pretty much told me that, no, this is not really a romance. Yeah, because they pretty much write, you know, with a formula, and this just, you know, I don't follow a formula. But I wanted to do something, you know, I wanted to do something a little different. I try to keep it fresh, you know, each time, you know, I write, you know, so you don't get bored. And plus, you just want to keep it fresh for your readers and just try different things. And so this was what I claim is my attempt at a romance. And
so how much sex did you have?
Well, you know, I'm kind of known for having some spicy scenes. You know, I did have some spicy scenes. You know, Diary of a Stalker. You know,
that's
popular, and that was you know, my erotic thriller. So people are used to seeing, you know, reading, I guess, some sexy scenes. But you know, since this was a romance, it was a little more tame, and pretty much it focuses on a group of college friends, Baldwin, Brendan, Bria, and Christopher. And again, they were best of friends in college. They haven't seen each other in years. In fact, they haven't seen each other in 10 years. But now they find themselves reunited. They come together in this small little North Carolina town to attend the funeral of one of their own who has passed. And basically, they come together for the weekend, and during the course of the next few days, during that weekend, they learn some truths about each other. And basically some of these truths that they learn about themselves and each other are kind of life-changing. So there are some secrets that are revealed. And like I said, it's just really a really good book of friendship and love. And so I do classify it as a romance.
It sounds like it could be a movie, of course. Most of your books, all of your books have that premise to them. So, you know, I can see this definitely as a some type of movie or something in the future. Is your plans to kind of direct it in that direction?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm just like all the other authors out there who, you know, that's the next step. That's the dream. We would love, you know, to see our books, you know, be adapted into, you know, a movie for TV or you know, the big screen, of course.
Screenplay.
And so this is, well, yeah, that too, a screenplay, stage play. So, again, you know, this is book number 10, and I think I've, at this point, I've put in the work, and I am ready to transition, you know, to the next level. And I know a lot of authors are, you know, they're being, you know, just like the first craze that came in with being the self-published authors, you know, now I know a lot of authors that are doing that. You know, they are filming and producing and writing and doing all that and turning their books into movies or into shorts and shopping them around at the various film festivals. And then there are others that, you know, several authors have gotten deals, multiple deals on TV and the big screen. So yeah, definitely that, you know, that's the dream. And, you know, I always say I claim everything, put it out there in the universe. I would love to see any, you know, any of my books, any of the 10 made into movies. And I really, you know, my Diary of a Stalker and the Stalker Chronicles, those two have really been, well, definitely Diary of a Stalker has been my best-selling book thus far out of all the 10 books. That's been my best-selling so far. And I would love to see, you know, the character Pilar and the author Xavier, you know, come to life on screen. You know, that would be like a dream. I have had the opportunity to see it as a stage play. It was actually what they call a vignette, where it was a shortened version of Diary of a Stalker, really just a couple of scenes or whatever. And it was just an amazing feeling to, you know, see live actors on stage in front of an audience, you know, acting and saying the words that you have written in your novel or whatever. So it was just that, you know, just that little piece or just that little dose of exposing me to what it could be was really thrilling. So I definitely hope the future holds it.
Well, ooh, yes, and I know she said a lot. That was absolutely not negative. No, but it was fine, though. Wasn't it a negative? Don't take it like that. You know, I was just drooling in your voice. But check it out, though. I'm sure you did. Go ahead, Dee.
With that being said, all right,
uh-huh.
You and Red basically have 10 plus books out there in the world,
okay.
While me and Miss Nasir have less than that, considerably. What kind of advice would you give either one of us when it comes to reviews, you know, not so positive reviews? How did you deal with them then versus how you deal with them now?
Well, when I first started, and I was told I was on Brian Smith's show not too long ago, me and Eric, and I was like talking like, you know, I had been out for so long. I was like, yeah, back in the day, and they were like, and Eric was like, you know, we're talking like we've been around forever, you know, we haven't been around that long. But when I first started, you know, I was, you know, very sensitive, and I had a very thin skin, and I always said that was because, you know, I'm a Pisces, and we're very sensitive and emotional. But,
That explains it.
But and I think there's some truth to that. But over the years, I mean, I have been around for a while now. I mean, there are definitely authors out there who have considerably more than 10 or, you know, 10 books out. And I'm impressed that, you know, they have this vast number of books, and they have been out the same number of years that I've been out. So that, you know, that's really, you know, I'm like, wow, how do you do it? But basically, you know, I just realized long ago that, you know, I do, you know, I'm not going to be one of those authors who sits here and claims that I don't read my reviews, because I definitely do read my reviews. But basically, I just realized long ago that everyone's not going to love what you write, and I just accepted that. I mean, I have a great following of readers, and I'm very popular with the book clubs. I do a lot of book clubs every year. And I realize that there are so many readers out there that have followed me from day one. You know, I have people that contact me that remember the first book I ever wrote, you know, The Ties That Bind, or remember when I got, you know, the three-book deal and went mainstream. So it's just nice to know that I have that following that do appreciate what I write. I mean, I know, you know, my books are basically classified on the genre. They've been everything from women's fiction, contemporary fiction, to erotica. And, you know, I accept any of those titles, but I realize that everyone, you know, is not into erotica. Everyone does not, you know, like maybe some of the storylines that I write about, you know, which deal anything from suicide to friendship to stalking to molestation, divorce, I mean, you name it. You know, I'm just across the spectrum. But, again, like I said, there are a lot of readers that do enjoy it, and those are the ones I write for, and I'm writing for myself. You know, these characters come alive in my mind. And I always joke about, you know, hearing the voices, and I always joke about, you know, that's why I wrote the sequel to Diary of a Stalker, and back in the day when the Ties That Bind came out, I wrote the sequel to that, because the voices, you know, the characters, they were still speaking to me, and their stories were not done. So, you know, pretty much, you know, I'm writing for the readers that enjoy what I write, and I'm writing for myself and the characters that speak to me and that come alive in my mind. And you have to just let all the rest of it go. I mean, if there's something that just keeps coming up, you know, I mean, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but if there's some type of, you know, editing problem that keeps every book they're saying, you know, tighten up your editing, you know, that's something that can be improved upon. you know, if it's something like that. But if someone's just saying, oh, I didn't like that stupid character, or she did something crazy, I mean, you know, that's just, that's your opinion, you know, that you just kind of let that go. I mean, I have been very, I guess, blessed that I haven't really had a lot of negative reviews. Of course, I've had some, but the majority, probably 90%, 95% of my reviews are very positive, and the people are enjoying my story. So I just kind of look at it like that. I mean, if you're passionate about it and you are a true writer and you're not in it for the wrong reasons, I think people could pretty much probably say anything that you would still continue to write, and you're going to also continue to improve your craft. You're not going to just, you know, keep rolling out these books with editing problems and puncture, you know, just all that goes with that. You're going to continue to learn and improve your craft, and you know, that's what a true writer would do. So you just go with the flow. That, you know, that's what I do. You just go with the flow, and if there's somebody out there that just really, really hurts your feelings, you know, I mean, I've had some reviews where it's like, you know, it almost is more personal than them talking about the book. It's almost like, you know, it's a personal attack, and I'm like, you know, I don't know this person, and they are, like, you know, saying all this stuff. So you just have to learn to, you know, get past it and keep doing what you love to do.
Yep. She's right about that. Because I remember, and I always bring this up all the time, as Dee Dee said, that, you know, the one review I got about not having
the condom.
My characters put condoms on before they have sex or whatever. You know, that was their opinion. But, I mean, this is a fantasy world that I'm writing in. So, you know, all that stuff that they're thinking about in real reality, I guess, you know, I mean, I could have took five, it could have been one sentence and put his condom on before or whatever, but it was just crazy to get a bad review for that.
Oh, I know.
You know,
I know, and sometimes I think the problem is that some reviewers or some readers, they really don't, I mean, they don't know how to review. So, you know, sometimes they'll, you know, put a spoiler in there and tell what happened, or, you know, I think that's the whole thing. They really don't know how to review, and just because maybe they didn't like what, you know, like, oh, that was so stupid, I never would have done that. Exactly. You never would have done that, but this book is not about you. So, you know, little things like that, which should not affect the review, because you wouldn't have done that. But I've learned that people will do some stuff that you, I mean, look at the headlines. What we see on the news every day. People will do some pretty stupid stuff. I wouldn't think I would ride to Florida like the lady did years ago with the diver on to get to the astronaut.
Hey.
You know,
I'm from Houston here.
I wouldn't do that either. She did it. You know, she did it.
Let's not rehash these Houston people.
So, you know, people will do anything, and I believe pretty much, you know, I think any storyline is realistic because people will do some crazy stuff.
Yeah, she was an astronaut. Lo and behold.
Driving, putting a diaper on so she don't have to stop. I mean, who does
that?
I mean,
They say reality stranger than fiction.
Exactly.
So what do you got coming up?
People to tell you in your own book, that don't make sense, because people would never do that. How do you know? How do you know that's not possible?
Exactly.
But I'm not gonna talk. I mean, I've been, like I said, I use the word blessed because I have some really good readers, and you know, maybe there's something wrong. You know, they'll let me know, and I appreciate that. And sometimes I'll listen, because before I drop each book or before I turn in each manuscript, I always have a beta test reader, or readers, should I say. And these are, you know, readers that are avid readers that read in my genre, and I always give them the manuscript before I turn it in and let them read it, and we go through, and they tell me, okay, I don't think this is realistic, or I don't think the character would say this, or I don't think he would say that, or I don't think he would do that. And so sometimes, you know, I will listen because they may have a good point, and other times, you know, I'll leave it just as it is. So I don't want to come across like, you know, I just don't listen to them at all. But I think in a lot of cases, some of the reviews can be opinionated, or they just really don't know how to, you know, do a legitimate review as far as when we're talking about ratings and you're rating it one or something, because you don't think the character should have done that, or that she would have done that.
The reviews do provide some insight, and that always helps. You know, you become a better, well, not always, but it generally helps you become a better writer, because they may have seen something that you didn't see, and you're like, that makes complete sense.
Right.
You know,
I mean,
but then there's also
yeah.
those people who be like, yeah, this book is 5 stars, even though I couldn't read it. Okay, well,
well
you know, help
you know,
me understand
I mean,
that one.
You know, I'm going to be honest about that, too. I mean, I don't know for sure, of course, but, you know, I think there may be some books out there where, you know, a lot of authors, you know, they really have their followers. You know, they always talk about the cult followers, you know, followings. I think there are some authors that kind of have some of those types of readers who are really passionate about them and anything they write. And even if it was total garbage, I think they would still give them, you know, a 5-star rating. And so we have the opposite end of the spectrum, too, where, you know, regardless, you know, they're going to always give them just this really, really great great rating.
Okay. Well, you know, that's really good. And, you know, it happens all the time. And you're right. It's just like, you know, this business is kind of like the music business as well. You got groupies and you got all that. So it happens. But
It definitely happens. That's the basis of my Diary of a Stalker is a fanatic. It went from being a groupie to being a fanatic fan. So, I've seen it. I've been out here long enough to see quite a bit now, and I've also had the debate over and over again with male authors who say that, you know, that it's not easier for them. And the women don't flock to them just because they're male or attractive or whatever. I've had that debate as well. But, again, you know, I know what I've seen.
But, see, it's perspective, completely perspective.
Well, yeah, it's perspective. But when you keep seeing, you know, like I always say, you know, as far as rumors go, you know, when you keep hearing the same thing over and over again, somewhere in there, there's a little bit of truth somewhere. It may not be all of it, but there's a little bit of truth. And I've done a lot of conferences, events, and you keep seeing the same thing over and over, you kind of get it, you know?
Like me and Ms. Newhouse get into this one all the time because she's like, you know what, the reason why, you know, I ask you to come along is so that you can draw on the women and then they can bring the book, you know, they can buy the book. It's like, that's so sexist, you know?
But it really is reality, and I know most male authors will not admit that. But, you know, most of you guys will do just a little bit of flirting, and you know it works, and you know that the women love the male authors, and it's just something about, you know, a male author. I know that's because there are not a lot of African-American authors that are male out there.
Well, there are not a lot of male readers. So to have, an author that's male, it's like, wow, you know, I know a bunch of guys who don't even like reading, and you're actually writing these.
Yeah, and
it's an anomaly.
Yeah, it's just maybe something sensual about that all in itself, you know, that, oh, he writes and he can, you know. So I don't know, but I know what I've seen, and I will stand behind that.
All right. Well, we definitely were glad to have you on the show, and, you know, just tell people how they can get your book if they wanted to get it or if any book signs you got coming up.
My next event is going to be, let me look at my date here. It's going to be Thursday, August the 1st. It's at 7:30. It's going to be Ella Curry's Atlanta Chocolate Social. And so this year it's going to be held at Shula's, let's see, I'm reading from here, Shula's 347 Grill. And this is actually a restaurant that's inside the Atlanta Marriott Buckhead location, and that's where the National Book Club Conference is going to be held. So I'm one of the featured authors on that, in again, August 1st. Now, as far as my readers and my future readers reaching out to me, they can find me on my website. That's going to put any of my tour dates and just information about every one of my books and a little bit about myself, and that's under my name, electaromeparks.com. That's my official website. And, of course, I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com, under, again, my name, Electa Rome Parks. And I have a blog spot as well, which is, again, my name. So I'm making it really simple. Everything is pretty much under my name, you know, electaromeparks.blogspot.com.
All right.
This is
we definitely would like for you to stick around, but I know you got things to do. So I also want to get our other guest on because I know she's probably sitting there like, when are we going to talk to me? When are they going to talk to me? So we're going to definitely talk to you. And I intentionally saved you for a second.
Newbie's waiting in line, man.
We got this paranormal thing going on, so we're going to definitely talk to you about that. But
So, Electra, do you have to leave right now? Because I know you got, you got stuff to do. And you don't have to do long interviews anyway, because we talk this shit anyway. You know, it's fair. Let's go.
Oh, you're just putting it out there, huh? Oh, you don't like
I'm putting it out there.
Well,
no, because I know you.
I am going to go ahead and sign off, but I know there'll be other opportunities for us to talk in more length, and I want to thank you again and thank DV again for having me on. It's always a pleasure. I always have so much fun. The time just goes by so quickly. And one day we're going to
before you go, though, let me say.
Okay.
We definitely go. Go ahead and say what you're going to say, because I got to tell DV something before you leave.
No, I was just going to say, I know one day we're going to have that interview where you're just not going to hold back on those questions, because I know you can get, with your other guests, but you always, be with me. So I know one day I'm going to get that interview, but.
Yeah, you definitely will get it. Trust me. You will. But, DB, I don't know if you was a guest on the, was you a guest before or was a host at the time, but do you remember when Electra was a guest host on the show on Word Sexy?
Do you
even remember that?
And DB had forgot. I remember. He was on there. He was on the show, of course. And I was the co-host. And we had the author that we were interviewing was Dwayne Joseph.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun.
Right?
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun.
My memory is like yesterday. That's pretty much the extent of it. Yesterday.
Right.
So.
But, Electra, it's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule and letting us listen to that fabulous, sexy voice of yours. And we will definitely hook
that's
up for sure so we can talk.
Okay,
well,
thank
you know.
You
that's
okay,
it.
Thank,
all right.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Good night. Okay.
All right,
so what we're going to do now, is we're going to keep going forth. And, Miss Nessa, I know I keep saying your name wrong, but how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. I'm enjoying myself listening to y'all.
Well, yes, and now it's your turn to be on the mercy seat. So we're going to talk to you, and just give us a little bit of background on you a little bit. I know you kind of did earlier in the segment, but we want to give you a chance to kind of tell us a little bit about you. And I know you said you write in several genres, and, tell us how many books you have and all that. So,
as of right now, the paranormal book we're talking about, Soraya, that's going to be my fourth release. I have two other ones out. One's called Untrust, and the one behind that's actually a prequel to that book, and it's called Wicked Blues. And then I have an anthology presented by Shiana. It's with Miss Mika and Fidel Love, and that's called Crazy, Sexy, Cruel. And my story in there is called Deceptive Realities. That's about a girl who wakes up beaten, bloody, and knocked out, and she has no memory. And she has to figure out, who tried to kill her and did they have reason to kill her and, about her quest, to get her life back. And that just dropped the end of May. And then this one that we were talking about, Sarai, is my first paranormal, and that's coming out toward the end of this month.
Okay, when you chose paranormal, that genre,
yes.
What made you go with telekinesis or shapeshifting? Why did you choose that avenue of paranormal?
Well, I like dealing in, paranormal, but I also like things that could possibly happen. There's nobody saying that, telekinesis doesn't exist, but with these kind of things, it's easy to say it doesn't, but we need so much proof that it does. They can't discredit it nor, promote it. So these things could really happen. So that also makes, interesting to me. And as far as, she doesn't shapeshift, but she can, bend things up and change their other things for them. So... that's her gift that she was born with and everything like that, and she's having a lot of trouble controlling it. It's a lot of, backstory to it. It starts out when she's small, and she's basically, trying to deal with it then, and then when she grows up, she's actually being chased.
It kind of reminds me of an old movie that came out some years ago. It was called Firestarter, but it was about a woman, a little girl who had the power. Actually, Drew Barrymore, in her early days, played that part. And even though it wasn't telekinesis, she had the power to look at things and ignite fires and kind of start. And she was like, as she was coming up, and she was trying to control it. And when she started learning how to control it, with anger, of course, it was. And her father had it as well. He was trying to protect her.
Protect
his
right.
was killing him. Right, his was killing him, and that's interesting. So, Divi, you got any questions for our guest?
You know what? What I wanted to make a, I really appreciate. I saw both of your book covers, and I was happy. You know, because every time I hear someone say urban lit, I'm automatic. In the back of my head, I'm thinking, okay, we got cars, we got maybe a little dope on the side. You know, they rolling in money, half-naked women, maybe a little skyline in the background.
No,
you know,
not I.
And right, and none of your covers reflected that. But I did have one thing, one question. Both, like, okay, not both, but your main characters tend to be men, but you have women on the covers. So I was, you know, I was like, okay, I want to know the rationale or the reasoning behind that.
Well, because men are the main characters, but the women also, they're the main characters as well. But the backstory, so the backstory is always, it seems to be so far about the guys. But the women are very strong leads. They're not, you know, B characters or anything like that. And, you know, they're kind of equal in that kind of footing. Soraya actually... she is the main character in the book. I mean, you know, it's her name. So, you know, but I just kind of did that. I do my own covers because of the same thing that you specified. I used to have other people doing them, and I would say, okay, I live in Virginia. People down here, for her to be doing all this, you know, flipping and all these things that she's doing, she can't be no little skinny girl. They don't like that down here. And she's dark. You know, she needs to be brown skin and everything. And I got back like 5 covers where I got a little light-skinned, skinny girl with a gun. And I'm like, okay, I don't need that. She doesn't even have a gun.
So what part of Virginia?
What
part of Virginia are you in?
I'm in 7 cities in Hampton.
Oh, okay.
So, you know,
I've been
about
there,
an hour out of Virginia Beach.
Right, yeah, I've been there. I love it, love it, love it. I was stationed up there when I was in the military and lived up there for about 9 years up in the area, so... Richmond,
oh, yeah.
You know, Petersburg, all of that, you know, is my thing. So, got some young ones up there, some, you know, that are there. So, it was a very interesting lifestyle up in Virginia. I love that. So, well, I'm glad that you, decided not to go with that because, like Vivi said, a lot of them, and I was even guilty when I first started of having a skyline and all that. And my books weren't even urban fiction, but, you know, it was at the time, I guess because it was so hot and new, everybody was trying to have that look, you know. But
right.
I definitely learned a long time ago, by my third book, because I have 15 now, but by my third, I decided to change that because I wanted to write to people, not to black people, if that makes sense. You know,
right.
When you write certain types of genre, you can get stuck in that. And we've had that conversation on the show before where, you know, when you got the skyline, the dope dealer, whatever, excuse me, and you have that going on. I mean, you, and if that's what your goal is to be stuck in that one genre, then you can succeed in that by having that kind of thing. But I want people that want to read, people who like to read my books. So I'm not stuck with just African Americans or any type of. And I also try to make my characters diverse. You know, I have to try to have like different types of characters in my books: white, black, Asian, whatever, Indian, whatever. You know, I try to have a character that's something of some type of nature.
I do that as well. Like in my first book on trust. But one thing about the skyline and everything like that, you know, I live in the suburbs, borderline country. We don't have all that there. So if I put that on the cover, people are like, "Where that at?" Especially if all my books are based in this area. So that would have been unrealistic.
Right, exactly.
You know.
Right.
And also, all of my books have a lot of diversity in it. My first book actually has characters from Egypt. You know, Hispanics, Jamaicans, and the main character actually doesn't know what his race is, and that's one of the points of the book that kind of carries over. He actually has no clue what his nationality is. I think there's about 6 or 7 different nationalities in the first book because diversity is beautiful. And when you live around a bunch of military bases, that's what I grew up seeing. I don't have an all-black neighborhood or all-white neighborhood. It's just mixed. So like, I like to write about what I know and what I see, you know. And I see a lot of diversity, so that's what I write about.
So you have a military background or parents, someone that was in the service?
Yeah, both my parents were in the Air Force.
Okay.
So they were both
in
the Air Force.
So.
But I was here, though. I remained here. They're from other places. They met here. But still, you know, I got to be on the base and all the schools and everything like that. Because, you know, I've never gone to a, you know, all black school or all white school. They're all mixed up. I didn't even know what racism was until I was about 13.
Right. The Department of Defense schools are great in that aspect. I love that. You know, I did 22 years in the Army myself, so I know the deal about the schools. My kids went to those schools, and they didn't know about racism either until, you know, it was told to them at a later age, you know, when people start kind of splitting up and hanging with their own crowd at a certain point. I think it starts in middle school where they start breaking up and kind of doing that. But, you know, when you're in elementary, everybody's playing together and they're kicking each other's ass and fucking up each other, you know, whatever. And it has nothing to do with color. It's just because you just don't like the motherfucker, or you do, or they took something from you or something. Nothing to do with race, you know what I mean? So that's what that was. Okay, so that's interesting because there's not a lot of paranormal authors out there. There are some that are, well, they are, but they're not a lot of black ones that we know of. And there are some that in the past that are now coming out that said they were in that genre, and even having science fiction, you know, authors as well that are of color. So it's interesting when we do get that. And I have some paranormal books myself. I actually have two paranormal series that I've done. One is a vampire paranormal series, and the other is about a succubus. That's why I was asking about that. But, you know, Curse of the Nocturnal Seductress is the one about the succubus who gets loose and all of that, but you know, and those are just books. I just love doing different things. I don't want to be stuck in one type of book. And even though they're still kind of erotic, still the concept and the aspect of you know, having that difference is what we, you know, I would like to do. I don't want to just be stuck with, you know, rolling up a joint and the dude is in jail and he comes out and now he got to get his business back and the girl's now with the dude that was his rival and now he's got to get his, you know, all that shit. How many do you write this shit? You know what I'm saying? Go ahead.
Yeah,
I know you got something to say.
Yeah, my books are also different because as a person, I get bored real easily. So when I write, I get bored. That's why, you know, go back to different genres and all that stuff like that. And I like to switch it up to keep my readers interested and, you know, go, oh, well, she can write that too. And, like, my next book coming out after Soraya is called Solomon Song, and that's about a single father. You know, because so many books about, you know, single mothers and all the drama they go through. But there's a lot of ratchet, you know, mothers out here, too. And it's about a dude that, you know, gets caught up and he's trying to do the right thing. He ends up with a baby.
Say it again. It's a bunch of who out there? A bunch of what?
Ratchet mothers.
A bunch of there you go. Which I'm going to bring the point up. Since you said that, I'm going to let you continue to finish, but I got to say this because yesterday being Father's Day, you know, I saw on Facebook a lot of people saying, you know, ups to the mothers who raise their kids without the father and all that. Okay, I get that, but damn, this is Father's Day, okay?
Yeah.
Y'all had y'all fucking day and all that, and I'm sorry that y'all had to raise your kids by yourself and all that, but damn, man, there are some good fathers out there that's doing the right thing. So, you know, I get tired of hearing people doing, you know, saying that, and I would say I got upset, but I was just like, damn, you know, here we go.
Okay.
Bash the motherfucker.
Well,
you got to bash a man on the Father's Day, too. Damn. Anyway, go ahead.
I got upset. I made a few posts about that. You know, it's not about, I said, this day, you know, I lost my father. My father was murdered. So I used that day to, you know, celebrate him and remember him. And it just grinds my freaking gears when it's, you know, battling about who needs to celebrate Father's Day and, well, he ain't do nothing. So I'm the mother and the father, and y'all got your own day. And I'm like, this is not what none of this is about. None of it.
Right.
And it just irked me.
And if you feel like cussing, go ahead, you can. This is Word Sexy Radio. You can say what the fuck you want to. It's not a problem. I'm not the only one that cusses, even though DV doesn't sometimes. Most of the time, he does cuss. He just does it with taste. I'm just tasteless with my
thank
shit.
Thank you. I cuss taste.
But anyway.
It makes me feel
yes, you do. But that's just my shit. But anyway. But
I got you. I'm not a shy person. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. But, you know, I just think that and I would have did it with Lecter, but Lecter was talking so much. You know, I had to let my girl go when she does, because she's such a great, great author in her right, you know, as well. She's been out there and catered dudes, so I always let her just go on and just say what she had to say. But back to you, sweetheart. I think it's a good thing that you're doing, you know, and I definitely want to get into you as your books, you know, to read and find out where you're coming from and, you know, with that aspect. You say you have 4 books out. And what is your future projects? What do you have? I know you just went over one about Solomon's, you said Solomon's Song, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's
coming out next. And actually the Untrust series, main character's a guy named Gemini. That's the one I told you doesn't know what race he is or anything like that.
Right.
There's actually five books to that series, but they're not like, you know, cliffhangers or anything like that. They're actually all told in different time periods. So some is about him and some of the other people in the group, but some is about his father. You know, so all of those, you know, kind of mesh together. There's five of them all together, but I don't want to put them out back to back because I do want to be free to do other things.
Right.
You know, because I've actually been writing about the sixth grade. I wrote my first book in the sixth grade, and I got like a whole closet just full of stuff that's like, write me, you know, and they're written. I just
so,
need to type
so how old
me,
are you,
you
now,
know?
If you don't mind me asking? I mean, I know women don't like to tell their age, but you've been thinking about shit since she was in the sixth grade? God,
yeah. Well, when I used to go to a movie and I would get irritated, you know, and I'd be like, well, this should be better and that should be better. And they was like, well, if it's better, why don't you write a book? I said, that's not a bad idea. So my first book was like a science fiction called The Homies of Harlem. And it was like a little kind of Wizard of Oz type book and everything. And I used to always get in trouble in class because I'm passing around parts of the book for everybody to read. And teacher kept taking it from me and put that away and, you know. So it's the addiction started way back then.
Wow. Well, DV, I know you got some comments here for this one.
You know what? I started reading the book descriptions for the books. So because I didn't like, I was like, man, we ain't talking about man one of these books. So you know, I kind of want to get the heads up so that I don't have to read. give us a brief rundown on the gist of the book. Of the books, plural, because they seem to be following a timeline.
Yes. The first book that I released was called Untrust. It takes place about 2010, and the main character is a guy named Blue, his twin sister, and he doesn't sell drugs because, you know, that's played out. I don't want to write about any more drug books. He's actually into weapons and murder, but that's not really, you know, he's an assassin for hire, but that's not really what the book is about. The book is about actually a member of the Japanese Yakuza that comes into town and trying to kill him. And he's like, I don't know nobody from here. What's, you know, what's going on? And there's a whole lot of backstory to it. And, you know, and also, you know, Blue's not a nice fella. And when his organization is threatened and all the things that he's done come out, do they stand with him and fight, or do they try to save their own lives? Because he's, you know, he's done them all dirty. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on. All the characters have, you know, their own backstory, and, you know, it kind of blends everything together.
So of all the mafias you could choose, you chose the Japanese mafia to use to come after him. How much research did you do to get that? Because, you know, you've got people that's reading this stuff that have that, that may know about that background. So how much research did you do, and how thorough were you?
Oh, trust me, I did my research. I'm not going to half-fight about anything because, you know, I didn't know so much about them. So in order not to be looking half-assed, I got to go do my research. So,
right.
You know, I don't like writing stuff and people like, that ain't what happened. That's not how that go. You know, I don't want that label.
Go ahead, Dee Dee. I'll ask mine.
Right. In the midst of all the research, because God knows, I'm a researcher too. Like, what were some facts and some things that you found out that, you know, that you didn't know, or that you didn't know to begin with, or that, you know, you just found interesting?
Well, that they're part of, the Yakuza are part of so much of that culture. I mean, they have their hands in the government, they have their hands in everything, and the actual plan that the guy coming after Blue is, his name is Abu Katsumura, and he is part of the Yamaguchi-Gumi tribe. The clan and the Yakuza. And what they actually do, they actually go into businesses like during the, you know, the big board meetings or whatever, and say, you know, look at here, we got this dirt on you, this dirt on you, this dirt on you, this dirt on you. Turn over money and control or we're going to expose you. And they're not going to argue with them, you know, so they're running everything over there.
So let me ask you, now this is good. I'm glad you did ask that question first, Eve, because it saves into mind. Well, did you use real historical people to describe the history of this tribe, Japanese tribe, or did you kind of make up different names to kind of, shadow those people that are actually in that organization? Or is that really an organization, or did you make up a name that shadowed the organization that exists?
No, the Yamaguchi Gumi clan actually does exist. They do exist, and I picked them specifically because they seem so interesting to me. They're, you know, they're very old. It stretches back so long, but they are real.
So that's why it comes to the question: did you use some of the real characters, the people that are part of that organization, to explain the history of how this thing? Like, say, you know, you start off with the history of the tribe, how they started. You use real names to describe. Okay, this guy started this, and they did this, and this happened, blah blah blah. To, you know, to give the background of the tribe.
But no, I didn't use any actual names in the book because, you know, this is still to the mafia, so, you know, I'm not trying to go that far into it.
That's what I'm saying.
But,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I didn't put myself out there like that. I just took the history, you know, and the things that they didn't, you know, incorporated it that way. As far as the personalities of other people, though, every character I've ever written about is based off a person that I know. And they go, this person real? I go, yes, they may not look like that, but they all come from somebody. And it makes it easier to write. It makes it easier, you know, to make them come alive. Like, one character, he always throws his keys on the table when he comes in the house and, you know, ticks everybody off. Or one person scratches their beard a certain way. You know, I know that because this person is real in my head. So that helps me, you know, make the characters flow more. And it makes them more realistic because I can't read about anybody. I can't visualize or see or, you know, know.
Right.
So even down to the way they laugh.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And everybody always wants to know, who did you base Blue off of? And I'm like, I'm not telling you that, but he's a real person because, you know, he's such a bastard. And everybody wants to know, who in the world is this? But I'm not going to call the dude out. Just that's the positivity
right.
that you take from negative people. You know, it helps you know, further, especially when you're writing. It helps you further, you know, bring somebody to life.
Right. Interesting. So is this going to be a series or is this like, because DB was saying, I think what you said before, was it was a timeline with your books. So is this going to be like a timeline of your books coming out in different time frames, or like in a timeline effect, or are they with a connection some type of way, or are there going to be a series that actually goes with one of your books, or, you know, like say with the paranormals, is there going to be a series of that, or is it just going to be the one book, or how do you plan on doing that?
As for the urban stories, like I said, the ones about, you know, Gemini and Blue and all them, there's actually five of those. You know, the first one is about Blue. The second one is about his father, Gemini, because everybody wants to know, how did this one person cause so much havoc and he's not even around in this book? You know, the third one is when his son, when Blue's son actually is older. And then there's a... one book about two of the main characters from Entrust. They have a real tainted history that you discover once you read Entrust, and they have their own standalone book. That happened,
right, okay.
You know, way back. And then the last book is about one of the girls from the third series. She's actually an assassin from Kenya, and her name's Dragon, and she has her own standalone book. So it's like they're connected, but they're not. You know, you won't, you know.
She's from Kenya, but they call her Dragon. Interesting.
Yes, there's a definite reason for that, and the main one being that she calls herself a dragon, and she has a full-body dragon tattoo on her. And it's the reason that she got the tattoo, you know, is how she got her name. So she's not nothing nice.
All right. Well, that sounds good. So how do people get your books? How would they get them?
They are available on Amazon, Smashwords, CreateSpace. You know, they can always link onto my Facebook page and find, you know, the links for everything. And they're in, you know, they're in Kindle, they're in paperback, Kobo, iTunes. You know, Smashwords offers you, you know, a lot of different formats you can get the book in.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. So, any book signs, any tours, anything you got coming up?
You know, I'm working on that. I originally had one planned for the Virginia Beach Book Fair, but they canceled it. So I'm like, you know. Not a lot of things come through Virginia when it comes to, you know, any kind of urban, African-American books. So,
well,
have you
thought about trying to go to the what is the thing in New York, D.B., what's it called?
There's two. There's the Harlem Book Fair, which is you overpay and get under – basically undervalued. But then there's the Circle of Sisters, which is a really nice event. It's just really expensive. So,
right. You did that one.
Those are
you?
Both in New York that I know about.
Yeah, you did that one, right? The Circle of
yeah.
Sisters and whatnot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was fun. That was real fun.
I bet it was. I bet it was. You're up there with all them sisters.
No, but, you know, mm-hmm. it was nice. You know, like, we had four people to a table. The booth was, at that time, $1,500. So we basically shelled out about $375 a person. And, you know, all of us brought about 200 books and sold out. So
that's great.
You know, that was just in Saturday and Sunday. You know,
right.
So, you know, that's it is a nice venue because there are people in New York who love to read. Now, with the Harlem Book Fair, basically it becomes, if you're preferred, they give you an area where you're recognized. And if you're not preferred, you basically in the middle of nowhere with nobody to guide you. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like one of those type deals. I'm not advocating one or the other. I'm just saying that, you know, you should know people before you go to either one of these venues.
Right.
Right. Yep. And that's you know, a lot of these venues are like that. I mean, I've been to some where if you're not a mainstream author, they want to put you in the back corner somewhere, and you might get some help, or somebody might come to your table, or you have to go where the mainstream authors are and talk to them, and then grab some of them people and let them know you're an author, and you take them back to your table. You know, it's just
right.
a lot of work, and it's just crazy that it's that way. But a lot of these people, they set it up like that, and they discriminate like that.
When it comes to specifically black venues and books, they basically, from what I've experienced, the more mainstream you are, the more likely they are to put you in a group of other mainstream authors. But if you do something like urban fiction or contemporary fiction, erotica, things like that, they will basically stick you in the background like a stepchild. Like, you know, we want you to see all these we want you to see the religious books, and we want you to see the mainstream authors, you know, so forth and so on. And everybody who doesn't do that genre or who doesn't register that they're in that genre, they kind of, you know, put you out to pasture.
Yeah, you know, they try to, you know, make urban fiction, you know, the redheaded stepchild of, you know, the industry. But I look at it like this. That's cool. I like red hair. People with red hair have fire, and they're going to be heard eventually. So,
you know, but
that's all right.
It once you make it a like, there's nothing wrong with literature in it in of itself, but once you put out the best product possible, regardless of the storyline, if you put out a quality product, they have to respect you, or you can take your business elsewhere, and you know, other people who respect you will follow. You know,
true.
The thing is just that urban fiction is getting a bad rap because people they put their heart into it, but that's it. They don't put anything, you know, they don't go to an editor, they don't, you know, they got the same book cover. So people automatically expect, no matter how well your book is written, as soon as you say urban fiction, there's this stigma in their head. As soon as you say erotica, there's this stigma in their head. And it's like, oh, you do that.
Yeah,
you know
that's exactly what happens. I used to get that. I'm kind of like have a double-edged sword because I'm a chick, you know. So not only do we get the oh, you know, I said, well, what do you write? I write urban fiction, urban genre. And you, like you said, they get the oh. I don't read that too much. And then you got the other side going, but, you know, you're a female. So I'm like, okay, what does that have to do with the question? You know, well, you must be writing something about, you know, something you saw your boyfriend do in the streets. I'm like, ooh, no, not particularly. There are some, you know, great female writers out there, too. So I automatically get two strikes. But, you know, I try to encourage them, you know, go ahead and read it for yourself. You know, and then they go, oh, okay. Then once they come back from reading it, I get a whole lot of, yeah, you need a hug or, you all right? Or what happened to you? Because I write a lot of twisted stuff. And, you know, or did you, when I first came out, it was like, oh, you had a ghostwriter, it was a guy. And I'm like, no, I really didn't. I'm really kind of crazy on my own. I don't really need a ghostwriter. But, you know, I take all of that, you know, with a grain of salt because that's what's going to happen, and I expected that.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, and the truth is, they will stigmatize you. they would automatically tell you that because you're a woman, these are the genres you're supposed to write in. Or because, you know, you write urban fiction, these are the storylines that you are, you know, that you're supposed to adhere to. So, you know, once
you know,
go ahead, Rick.
No, what I was going to say, what they do is the same way. You know, we being males writing erotic fiction. For the longest, when I first came into the game back in 2009, you know, they were still saying that. And they kind of say it now a little bit. They're kind of opening up a little bit. But they're saying that a lot of women feel that when a man writes erotica, it's, you know, how can he do that? I mean, they're used to women doing it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So it's like always because women, they know the body, they know this or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But now they're just starting, I think, just in the last couple of years, starting to accept male authors who write erotica. And then, you know, you got to damn near do 100 times better than the women. And
yes.
I guess you got to have rubbers and stuff, because if you don't say the dude's putting a rubber on, I guess they ain't going to accept you in some aspects. But anyway, you know, but that's the way it is. I mean, when I first came into it, you know, Red Snapper, they thought it was a woman because there was no picture of me or anything on there. And, you know, Red Snapper, they thought it was a woman until later they found that it wasn't. So then now they want to scrutinize you a little bit more because how can this man write this stuff about what a woman is feeling and all this unless he's a gay or something or he didn't, you know, what they, you know, it's always some kind of stigma, like you said, they try to put on the genre that you're writing. So, you know, they figured you writing hard like you do. How can a woman write something like that, you know, and not be hard or whatever? So, you know, I mean, it's that thing and being able to prove yourself in it. It's rough, but, you know, if you love writing, just like Lecter said earlier, if you like writing and people give you bad reviews or whatever, you take it and go for it and keep going. You can't stop because they may have dogged you or a couple of people may have done it. And another thing that gets me through that is to know that everybody that's writing this stuff, they might not even have a damn book out there. You know, for one person to write a book and get it published and have it out there, you've accomplished more than anybody that wants to write. There's a lot of people that say they want to write a book but don't do it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or for whatever reason.
There's a lot of people.
So
who
you
do,
got
who should
more than one. Exactly. And but you got one, four. You got four books. So you've already done what four people wish they could do. And that's the way I look at it. So I got 15 out. So there's 15 people that wish they could write a book that say they want one or they want to write one. The first thing come out of their mouth, I want to write a book. And then you ask them what they want to write about. They want to write about their life. Well, what's so good about your life that I want to read about it? You know, that kind of thing. You know, so
they get offended. They like, what
do
you mean? I'm going to kill you. Then I'm right over
here. My life, I've been through some stuff. I've done some things. You know, next start going back and forth and all this shit. You know, it's like, you know, okay, your life is probably, you probably did go through some shit, but you got to make it in such a manner that I'm interested to read about it. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You got to put it in, you got to write it in such a way that makes me interested that I want to read about it. You know
what
I'm saying?
That's what I've told people before. You know, they'll come to me and they'll be like, oh, well, I want to write a book about my life and everything. I said, trust me, honey, everybody's life could be something that is in a story. But you can have the best hell in the world, but you have to know how to spin it. If you don't know how to spin your story, nobody's going to read it. You have to learn to sell yourself and you have to learn, you know, to take what's, you know, swirling around in your head and learn how to put it on paper. And if you need to get help, that's how to do it, then do that.
Yep. That's like
nobody
my girl
knows more
who,
about your life than you.
Right, this is like Sister Soldier. She just came out with another book, part two to her first one that was just the greatest story ever told. Everybody loved it. What was the greatest story ever or the coldest winter ever? And now she has finally come out with part two, and I know she's hoping to get that because all the other books that she wrote after that just didn't have that grind in it.
Yeah.
You know, that she put in that first book. But, you know, I noticed even with the even in the music industry and a lot of that, a lot of times the first book is always going to be really, really, if you really put your heart into it, you know, those first couple of books or whatever are going to be great. But the only thing that I see wrong, and that's even with mainstream ones, when you get there and you start, you can eat now, you got food in your stomach and all that, you don't have that same drive as you had when you were hungry and you're putting that book out there, you know, the first one, trying to get noticed. So you got to try to keep that, you know, keep that mentality. Without losing it, so that you can keep your, you know, your people that's interested in you interested. So how do you do that? You got four books now. What are you doing to keep yourself hungry?
I'm kind of blessed in one way because I just have so many ideas. You know, it's always something popping, and you know, there's always something going on. There's so many ways to, you know, express things that I have, you know, twirling around in my head, but. you know, also, that's another reason I play with different genres, because you can get burnt out. You know, you can get burnt out with, you know, from your ideas and everything like that, and that's why I like to, like, at points of time, I could be writing two books at one time. That way I don't write myself in the corner. And, like, okay, like Soraya is supposed to come out at the beginning of June, but it's coming out at the end of June simply because, you know, with life and everything else like that, I said, okay, this good is good. This book is really good, but I write fire. So if it's not fire, I'm not going to put it out just because I said it's coming out the 1st of June. It come out at the end of June and then be fire. I'm not going to put anything, you know, half out. And it's also about, yeah, I guess that discipline, learning, you know, I think Treasure Blue always said it, you know, to write is to rewrite. You know what I mean? And now if I need to go back and add this or edit that, you know, because I know you're going to be judged that way, you have to keep coming with something good because you don't want to get in mediocre and feel like, oh, she lost it. I don't want to hear nothing else she has to say. I don't want that to happen. So you have to put your heart into something every time you do it, and that's a lot more difficult than people understand. You can get lost. You can lose yourself. And I got, you know, four little people, and it's, you know, I have to split time with them, and then my brain, you know, when you get in the zone, you're just gone. You're not there. You're not present.
Right.
So.
And you're right. You know, and even me, in my example, even though I have all these books out, the first five books that I wrote, I went back and rewrote them.
Yeah.
You know, you have to. You know, sometimes you got to come up with new additions. You know, fix some things that might have not been right in those in the beginning. You know, like she said, when you love your craft, you got to try to get your editors right. You know, to get it where it's looking as clean as possible. You know, you want to do that. You know, if you really care about it, you're doing it for yourself, not so much to everybody. You know, you want it to look good for everybody else because first impression is important. But the thing is you know, you just want to have the best that you can out there. And DB says it all the time. You know, you don't want to just throw some garbage out there. But with the way the publishing game is now, and people know that, and a lot of mainstream authors are kind of scared of it. You know, anybody now just about to put a book out. You know, they're so anybody can put a book out now.
Yeah.
But is it going to be worth it, though? Or is it just going to be some garbage that they put out there just because they want to try to get paid or whatever the reason they think they're writing for? This is not a get-rich-quick scheme. I always say this all the time. You got to love writing to do it because it's not a thing that you're going to get rich overnight. Now, there's some people that get that, but it doesn't happen to everybody. Everybody's not going to have that movie. You know, we want that.
Right.
You know, your book to maybe get a screenplay or something out of that, you know, or you may even write
your
own.
Real quick.
Yeah. But, you know, you gotta get it out there. You know, make it look as clean and beautiful as possible and nothing else. Show who you really are in what you got. You know, my books still aren't perfect in my eyes. I still want to, you know, even though I have all of them out there, I'm proud of them and I treat each one of them as if it was my first when it comes out. Like, I got a book coming out this fall myself. And it's just going to be like the first one I birthed because I treat them all like that. It's not like, oh, I got so many books now, I just ain't this one, it's just another one. I don't look at it that way. You know,
well,
but
no,
you
I mean,
got
you,
some
you know,
folks.
You always have to be like that, you know. You have to always, like you said, you can't relax, you can't sleep, but as soon as you think you are, here comes somebody else. And you're like, oh, wow, you know. You have to always constantly be grinding to stay on it, and it can be difficult, but... You know, you have to do it. Like, we're our own biggest critics. You know, like, well, this is good. I like it, but, this could have been better. But you know what? You always think of stuff after you put the book out. Oh, man, I should have added this part and everything. It doesn't matter what anybody says. It was a great book. I love it. It's my favorite story. You're always going to wonder. You know, and a lot of times that's how I get inspiration for another book. Because my first book on trust was actually, I wrote this book back in 1998. And I actually pulled character situations from other books and put them together, you know, when I actually, you know, wrote it to come out, you know, in 2012. Because I wanted to, so you know what, this could be better. And, you know, sometimes you have to do that.
Right. Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with taking a book that you wrote, your first novel, and revising it, even adding those things that you didn't. And that could be a marketing ploy on selling the book. Well, this is uncut or scenes that weren't in their first book before that were uncut, and, you know, or what do they call those now when you get those movies that are, you buy them on DVD and it's like uncut or whatever. It's something they call it.
Yeah.
I forget what the terminology is. But you get it. Director's cut. Well, you can do that with books as well.
Yeah,
and
it's
a good way. It's a good way of selling the resale of that book and giving them something different that they didn't have before in the book but it's still the same product. You know, you can do that. So, I mean, it just, you just have to, you know, be creative and you know, care about the craft enough that you want to do something like that. Like I said, I rewrote all my other books. They've been revised, new covers and everything. You know, so it's just, you know, and like you said, you're never going to be satisfied. I mean, even though those books are have been redone and everything and fixed up and cleaned up and all that, still, I'm just not, you know. But that's just me because I care about my books, you know. And you know, I want to get out there and people know me and blah, blah, blah. But if I can get one person to enjoy my book, I've done something in my book, you know.
Yeah,
that's me. But you know, there's people who want more, and I'm not saying I don't. But the thing is I'm just happy to get someone to say that they, you know, what really turns me on is when people come to me talking about my characters as if they were somebody real that they know.
I've been cursed out so much.
How did that girl do that? She was fucked up. How did she do that? You know, that
yep.
turns me on.
Yes, I get cursed out all the time. About these characters. How the hell you let him do that? He ain't this. And why did you let them die? I'm like, whoa, back up. Hold on, fam. You know, they get really upset.
They do.
It actually makes me happy because what you've done, when you evoked an emotion out of somebody that read your work. They didn't read it and go, oh, okay, and put it to the side. You got them mad to the point they want to confront you.
Right.
You know,
and
that's something that helped you see something to them.
Right. Even the one that dogged me with the review, they read the books. So they can dog me all they want to. They read the damn books. They read all of them.
So bad,
and they gave me a review
books.
For each one of them. Now, they use the excuse that, okay, I read this. Well, I thought the next one was going to be better, so I read that. But, you know, they like this shit. They just didn't want to admit. I think what it was, because it was so damn erotic and so damn sensuous, it was fucking their ass up so much that they just had to come up with something to justify why they was enjoying this shit. So they had to say something was wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's happened. That happened, so... You know, that's just what it is. But the thing is she read all five other series.
Yeah.
She dogged each
like
one. She
gave
3 stars each one of them, but still she read them. So I'm satisfied.
What you've done, though, you've made somebody uncomfortable. And you know what I'm saying? If people don't like things they don't understand, or like you said, you pull up something in and they didn't know it was there. I don't know. I felt this type of way about this. Or, you know what I mean? And people fear things they don't understand, and they don't like to be uncomfortable. So, and that's what I write, like a lot of, like I said, a lot of twisted things, a lot of, you know, I have one dude, like, he put this, you know,
give me an example of some twisted. Yeah, give me some twisted shit. Let me hear what you're talking about. Yeah.
There's one dude in Untrust, his name is Caesar. His particular thing is when he goes out to do jobs, he does jobs people want to make a point. He wants to make them messy. And he took one guy, you know, that somebody had hired him to do, and he put them in what's called a bronze bull. And he killed him that way. What a bronze bull is, I think it's Greek or Roman method of torture. And it's a big bull, and they'll put you inside of it. It's a big brass bull, and then they'll put something over your face, and then they'll put fire underneath it and light it and basically roast you alive. And when you scream...
I saw that in a movie.
You know what?
I
wrote that before
that
movie.
I
wrote that before
the movie
came out.
I don't
know what movie you're talking about.
What was that? That was... what was the name of that damn movie? I
can't think of the name of it.
Yeah.
But
it
I know
was,
where you come from. I was like, they just stole my stuff. But,
yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, that's what they did. And when they scream, you know, it sounds like the bull roaring and everything like that. Because remember,
I was
1998. So this, I was way before this happened. And I was like, oh, you know, somebody's just kind of crazy like me. But, you know, to do that nowadays, people was like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, why? They're like, why did you? Keep that. I said, well, he's going to die anyway. Might as well make it interesting. You know?
Right.
And they really get upset. And like I said, I've been asked, do I need a hug? What happened to me? Where do you get this? You know? And they're serious. And I don't want to laugh because they sound concerned. I'm like, it's my head just works like that. I can't explain how my head works. It says things, and then I type them out.
You don't have to explain it or justify it to no one. Just continue with your craft and continue to create. Because that's what it is. And there's an audience out there for it. No matter how fucked up shit I write, because I write some freaky-ass shit, there's an audience that loves my shit. So I write it.
Yeah.
You know, I write gay shit, too, but I'm not gay. You know, a lot of people will ask you, well, how you write this? How you know how to do this stuff, blah, blah, blah. You ain't got to experience everything just because you know how. You just do research and find out enough to put it down. You know, on paper.
I think it's funny. I don't get offended. I think because growing up the way I did, you know, going through everything I've been through, I have a very thick skin. So bad reviews, I read them because they're necessary. I don't get upset about it, you know, people yelling at me about this character, that character. That actually makes me happy, like I said, because I made you angry. I got an emotion out of you being angry or anything else. And you read that book so many times, you can describe in detail everything that I did that pissed you off. That's cool with me.
Yeah.
Because you're going to go tell somebody else about it, and, you know, and they're going to go read it and, you know, want to judge for themselves. And, I'm not shy. I don't scare easily at all. You know, so that's okay. I'm okay with that aspect of that. They can be upset. That's cool. Go make somebody else feel something about a book and get mad too, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, you just got to do what's you. You know what I'm saying? You got to. There's an audience, there's a following that's going to be there for you. Not everybody's going to like what you write, as we heard, and I know that for a fact. But, you know, you just got to keep doing you and getting that done, and, you know, they'll follow you. You know, you're going to have that following, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, so. But, you know, I'm glad that you're doing you. And now I'm looking at these pictures of you. Are you with the glasses on or what?
Yeah, wear them off. That's me.
Okay, just want to make sure I know who I'm talking to. Okay. But, I mean, I definitely want to read your work, you know, especially that the book here. What is it called? The one that's paranormal. It's got the girl in the front.
Her name is Soraya.
I definitely want to. That motherfucker is fine. I want to read the book because of her picture. You know what I'm saying? So, I'm ready to just check it out just because of that. And see, that's the thing. You have to be able to market it in such a manner to make people's interest, not only females, but, you know, whoever you're putting your craft toward is what you want to do. So that's it. So it's interesting, you know, and I applaud you and hope that you go forth and continue in this and don't let nobody stop you from being you and doing the things that you do in writing.
That'll never happen.
Yeah.
I've wanted it too bad. I've been doing it too long.
Right. I understand. You know, if you've been writing since sixth grade, I definitely understand that. Yeah, I understand. So, but you just keep doing it. That's the main thing.
I will.
So what else is you looking to get into as far as your creativity?
You know, people, you know, they read the love scenes in my book and they, you know, well, why don't you write some erotica? I'm like, well, I ain't mean to write it that way. That's just, you know, I want it to look realistic and not the typical, you know, other stuff, whatever. I'm really expressive when it comes to that. And people tell me I should write erotica. And, I haven't really looked into it. I haven't really thought about it. But, you know, if there's enough people, you know, telling you something, trying to give you a hint, you know, I might look into it, you know, when I slow down. You know, because I got so many things on my plate, but it's also something I might want to, you know, play with too. So,
right.
You know, do some more, you know, paranormal things. Paranormal is really fun because you can make so many things happen. You know, so many abilities that, you know, you could play with and twist around, and it's just really fun. I've had a lot of fun writing it.
Yes.
So.
Well, you know, I think that's good. So, What are some of your family members? Are you married? Or are you single? Or what?
No, I'm not married. When I do get married, I'm getting married one time, and that's it. So whoever I marry, I got to ride and die with them forever because I'm not going to divorce. Unless he puts his hands on me, then I'll probably go to jail, but, you know.
Right. Okay, my thing I want to say to you is, what does your significant other or whoever that you're dealing with, what do they think about you writing? Because a lot of times I know from my experience, I've had women that didn't want to talk to me because I wrote erotica or because I do the radio show, they want to see what you know, can you back up what you write, and who are you in the book, and I know you get those kind of questions.
I get that too, yeah. It's hard sometimes, you know, he wanted to know, this is kind of graphic. Who is this character supposed to be? And I'm like, I'm not ever going to tell you that. And it's also hard because when you write, it's really hard to maintain a relationship. If somebody, you know, and I tell them from the beginning, I'm going to be busy. There's going to be points where I don't exist to you. Don't get mad. Don't keep calling my house just because I work at home, but I'm working. You know, you can't call me all day. And when I talk, you're going to mess up my flow. So, you know, sometimes it's difficult to find that person that's going to be able to understand that, you know, between my kids and my work, I really don't have a lot of time for somebody that's needy. You have to be, you know, really well-grounded and, you know, have your own, you know, hobbies and interests because, you know, once we get in that zone, we sit down, 5 hours pass, we won't even know it. And then there's somebody sitting there, are you finished yet? I'm like, well, I haven't hit save, no. You know, so that's the balancing act, you know, that I have to, you know, grow and learn about. And do I really want to be bothered with this right now? Or do I just want to, you know, do I have the time to put into this? Because it's, you know how zoned out you can get. And I don't want to cheat anybody else out of any attention.
Right.
Especially
absolutely.
When I'm trying to hustle real hard right now. So.
Right. Well, yeah, I know what you mean, and that's probably why I'm not in nothing right now because, you know, it's, you know, you got to give people time and stuff, and it's not fair if you're not going to give them the full effect, and you know you're trying to do what you got to do in your genre of what you're trying to do. So
right.
I do understand. I understand.
And, you know,
and
I do say that. A lot of times people, or some, you know, somebody be like, well, I understand. And then when it really happens, I know you're going to be this busy. I kind of told you.
Right.
You know. Plus, I'm an insomniac, so there's no telling when I'm going to be upright. And, you know, you might want to be cuddling or something, and they're like, where you go? I'm at the computer clicking. I don't sleep.
Right.
So, and then that gets on people's
wow.
nerves. And, you know, hey, I gotta go. I might wake up with an idea. I have to type it now. You know, get out of the way.
Right,
you to the witch?
Right,
no.
Right. yep, I hear you. You got to chime in for your craft. And, it's the only way it's gonna get done. You know what I mean? You can, and like you said, a lot of people don't understand. They'll take, like I had this one lady who I was talking to, and she just couldn't understand. You know, where these ideas come from? You know, when I started writing, I was married. I got divorced. I think part of that divorce was possibly because of the writing, because she thought that I was degrading women and all kinds of stuff in the books that I was writing, and everything that I was writing was safe sex, and it was consensual adults. It wasn't any children or anything like that. So how am I degrading any women, you know, when there's people that are grown ups doing it, you know? But you know, that was their reason.
Maybe, her.
Yeah, because first she was trying to find out was I writing about us, which was zilch. You know, there's nothing going on there. So how can I be writing about us? But you know, just you know, I'm sure I did strike a nerve. But I'm glad of the situation I'm in and where I'm at right now with it. You know, I'm cool.
Right.
I'm good. And I'm writing, like I said, I'm in book 15. So, you know, after I finish this one that I'm doing now, it'll be it's the last of the series, book 6 of that series, and that'll be it. And I'm just going to concentrate on the paranormal side of things for a little while.
Yeah.
So, you know, that True Blood and stuff like that, I enjoy that kind of stuff. It's just, you know.
I think that's awesome.
Not,
so I'm going to get there.
Oh, you will. You'll get there. You just got to keep doing what you're doing, like you said. You know, just keep on doing it and not letting people stop you. You know, you just got to go and do what you have to do. So.
Right.
But I'm definitely glad that you came on the show, and I just wanted to, you know, we got 30 minutes left. But do you have anybody that you want to give any shout-outs to, anything that you want to say or any advice that you might want to give? Any author, if you had something to say to someone that was coming into writing now on writing and creativity, what would you give them? What would you tell them?
Number one thing, never let anybody tell you what you can and what you can't do. Never let anybody tell you how to write your own story because they're their words. If they don't like it, then go write their own book.
Right.
You know, make sure you join these groups. There's a book on Facebook called All for One Authors and Allison Edwards and Treasure Blue Runner. Then there's another group by Shannon Holmes. You learn so much in there. It's really, really important to do that because you have to learn.
What
you know,
is it
called again? Out of this is, All for One Authors.
All for One?
And you do, yeah, and it's ALL, then you have to put the number 41. And then there's a group with Shannon Holmes, and you really learn so much in there. And I learned a lot listening to, you know, her and, you know, Treasure and, you know, Raheem the Entertainer and all them like that because they really know what they're talking about. And, you know, Quan and all them, you really learn a lot. But that's how you learn. You know,
right.
If you go to a book fair, never sit down. you know, sell yourself shamelessly. And
right.
you just have to do that. And you just really have to get out there. Don't think, you know, sitting on a computer or Facebook or anything like that is going to get you where you want to go. You have to get out there. You have to hustle. You got to meet the people. They want to, you know, they want to meet their authors. So
right.
just being proactive and not getting frustrated. Well, you're going to get frustrated.
Right.
Let me rephrase that, but don't let it consume you. Because
right.
there's 1,000 other people feeling just like you do, but you might be that one that doesn't quit and gets where you need to go. So, you know,
right.
and learn how to, if you don't focus so much on these publishing companies, you know, join one of those groups and they'll teach you how to publish and, you know, do these things yourself. But it takes a lot of work
right.
and a lot of hustle. But, you know,
of
don't,
course.
And please, nobody please pay for an e-book deal. Please stop doing that. You know, people
yeah.
paying to get their books put on Amazon. It's free. Please stop paying people for it. You know.
Yeah. Yep, you're right. Especially e-books.
A lot of people get tricked like that.
Yep, they do. You are right on that one. So, yeah. So what is the future holding for you? If you had something that you could do right now and had the funding to do it, what would you do?
Oh, of course, you know, I would be making movies. That's originally what I was going to college for. I was going to Columbia University for screenwriting. But my mother ended up having to have a surgery that she recovered badly from, so I ended up not going.
Uh-huh.
And that's why my first book was actually supposed to be a movie, and that's why when you read a lot of action, and a lot of people say it reads like a movie, because that's what it was intended to be. So, of
yeah.
course, I would love to do that, you know, write for that or something like that, because I like a lot of action, a lot of drama. I like things that, you know, happen. I don't like to read a lot of backstory and, like, 3 chapters before something happens. I'll put the book down.
Right.
You know, so just, you know, more so pursuing that. You know, I write stage plays. I want to get more of those out. You know, that kind of thing. Just something where I'm just doing the same thing, but in a greater sense.
Right. So what do you think about Tyler Perry?
Tyler Perry, you know what? No matter what you want to say about him, he's an entity unto himself. He really is. He brought himself wherever he wants to be. I don't have anything bad to say, because I respect that man's hustle. You know, regardless
right.
of what you think of his work or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's just a question. Nothing about
oh,
me.
I
it's
know.
Just a question. Yeah.
That's just me. But, you know.
Yeah.
I respect
yeah,
his hustle, definitely.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who, yeah, they, you know, they got, they, like anything, everybody's not going to like you. There's going to be some negative this or whatever and all that, but.
Right.
But, you know, like you said, the hustle he has, you know, you can't knock that. You know?
Right.
And the one thing you have to realize is there's choices. If you don't like what he's doing, then don't support it. Go do something else.
Yeah, you don't
know?
Have to.
Right. Same thing with our stuff. If you don't like it, then go somewhere, find something you do like and support that.
Right.
You know, you ain't got to dog that because you don't like it. Just go
yeah,
find
that's
something
that's
you like and do it. And there's so many choices out there, things to do. A lot of people just don't do that. They just, I don't know. But we definitely want you to continue to go forward. And I thank you for your patience to that, you know, because I know Electra was going, and I wanted her to get hers out the way because I knew she was going to leave. And,
oh, no
and
problem.
And
then I enjoyed myself. My
to,
phone is beeping. I had
yeah,
so
and,
much fun.
She's a great author, and I just love when she does get a chance to come on. And she's one of the few mainstream authors that's down to earth that you can actually talk to that's not real arrogant and try to act like they're better than you and all that. So that's why I always like having
right.
her on the show. And there's others out there that I know, like Eric Jerome Dickey and a few of them. Those are, he's my frat brother and Carl Weber as well. And, you know, there's a few people out there that will talk to you. And you got some that, you know, they have a right to be arrogant to a point, but damn, when there's a sense of over-arrogance.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I like Terry McMillan, that kind of dogger, but I'm just gonna say what I feel. I'm happy that she's where she is and all that with her books and all this and movies and stuff. But she's dogs authors. She dogs authors out, and how come they get to get books now and put stuff out? We came hard, and we had to go through 20 years of experience, blah blah blah. We came up, and they now they can just make books, and you know they dog the self publishing authors as if we're not real, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, it's the same thing. It's just the technology has made it more available for us and more feasible for people to come out with something now versus you paving a way for other authors. Yes, you did pave a way for other authors to come, you know, but, you know, everybody's not doing mainstream, and these mainstream companies know that with Kindle and all this stuff, it's very easy that a lot of these things may drop off unless they keep up with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy for you to go out there and do your own thing. And even some of the mainstream authors are writing books on the side so they can get more money by maybe putting out a Kindle version or something or whatever and publishing it themselves. You know, they're doing that too. So, you know, it's a big thing. It's a big industry now. It has grown with technology. You don't have to be with a big publishing house. The only difference in that is your books may get in more stores if you are with a consignment, but you can do a consignment on your own.
Yeah.
And get your books at stores. But the thing is you know, really what mainstream does is really they control, it's more control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you being a self-published author, you have more opening of what you want to do. You can put out the book when you want to, cover decisions and all that. All those things you have a hand in. Versus if you were the mainstream companies. A lot of mainstream companies are now starting to let authors do that. But in the beginning, you would give me a manuscript and that was it. You didn't see it anymore. Or they wanted you to change something. You had to change it before for them to publish it or whatever, you know what I'm saying? You know, and you got to kind of be careful when you get to put something in a movie version too, because if a movie, once they buy the rights of your book, a lot of times to make it into a movie, you know, they can change
the
screenplay. And, you know, you're selling it. Once it's sold to them, I mean, you still have the rights to the book, but that screenplay is not yours.
Well,
you know,
that's
they
what
might even
never,
name
that's what she's having, you know, so many problems getting Cole's once it ever made into a movie, because Hollywood wants too much creative control. They want to change too much, and she's not having it. So she's actually got the rights back to her movie a couple times. And, you know, I got to respect that. That would be an awesome movie, but she's like, they're not going to chop it up and do what they want her to it. So, hey, I understand that.
And you won't. And the one thing about it is, you can sell your book to a movie company, and you don't get no money until they start filming.
Mhm.
And if they don't never start filming, then you don't get no money. So you have to wait until they actually start shooting. When they start shooting, then you'll get a big check. Depending on some companies, they might give you a piece of it, this and that, whatever. But the objective is to go ahead and get you out the way so they can do what they want with it.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll let you stick around. Some of them will let you stick around, depending on who it is that's directing whatever, and you can put input as an author to make sure that everything is being done correctly. It just depends. Because I know Rashawn Tate Burnaby just did a movie. Huh?
So I want a director credit.
Well, you'd have to definitely work on getting your own money then. Because you have to get your own money to put it together then, because, you know, they're not going to just let you come in. But you never know.
I know, but you know, that's the dream.
You never know. You might be able to get that, or you know, contributing contributing director or something. You know.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Something like that.
Yeah. But
I really hate to go, but my phone is about to die on me. So.
Well, I understand, and I really appreciate you. Okay. Well, we thank you so much for coming on, and we definitely want you to come back. Just keep up with us, and. You know, you're welcome to come back anytime. Once you come on Word Sexy, that's the way it works. So just let me know.
Thank you for having me.
All right, no problem. And we thank you for coming on. So we're going to continue on, even though you have to go. I'm going to do the rest of this 20 minutes. We got some time with music and all that. So we're just going to thank you for that. So
no problem. I'll talk to y'all another time.
All right. No problem. Okay. So this is the way it goes on Word Sexy Radio. We keep it going, we keep it moving. And what we're going to do right now is we're going to play some music and just to carry the show on out, because everybody's here and they have left me here holding the bag. So we're going to go ahead on with that. And I just want to play something sweet real quick for you and see what we got going on here. So that's what we're going to do.
Hey, baby. I know I haven't been asking you lately. I'm sorry. It's not that I'm running out. I want to be into you. You're all that I want. You're all that I need. So please, Tony.
Don't even accept no one above me. Lovemaking is a zone, a rhythm, a music.
Turn to hours.
Take your time.
Been listening to Word Sexy Radio, and we thank you for coming in and tuning in to the show. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Word Sexy Radio, hosted by Red Snapper and DB Hemp and Miss Cotton.